Happy Monday, everyone. And yes, Leland Vittert is absolutely right. Everything I'm going to tell you tonight is true. The opinions, however, those are of others, and they will be loud, and they will be energetic. And there are loads of reasons to be opinionated about some of the things I'm going to tell you this Monday night. Let me start with this. I like to go to Mexico. I actually really enjoy vacationing in Mexico. I go to Cancun. But I am not so sure I will make this decision as easily next time round after what I have heard has happened to a Michigan couple. If you haven't heard this story, do not go anywhere. And may I say that pertains to tonight, and it also pertains to vacationing. Because these two people, look at them happy. Oh, these vacation shots look great. They're stuck in a maximum security prison right now in Mexico. And the allegations against them have nothing to do with crime. It's about timeshares. Yeah. And so being stuck in a foreign prison with very little opportunity to talk to a lawyer or your family, and to be there for a month with criminals like rapists and murderers, well, that is a question I have for someone who's been there. Billy Hayes. He was stuck in a Turkish prison, and it looked like he might die there if he didn't escape. He has some advice for the Michigan couple about what to do, what to think, and what we should all think about leaving America for a foreign clime when we might not know just what they can do to us. I can't wait for this interview. Billy Hayes scared the daylights out of me back in the 70s and 80s, and I think a whole generation. He's got great advice for this couple as well. Also, in that unbelievable story out of Hawaii, the allegations that a doctor tried to maybe throw his wife off a cliff, bashed her head in, and now he's locked up with no bail. She's talking now. Unbelievable what she's reporting from her bedside. This is in court documents. Documents for which she sought a restraining order against him. She is now telling us all the things that happened right before the attack, during the attack, and who her husband allegedly called right after the attack to allegedly confess. I will tell you all that in a moment. And then, do you remember the name Virginia Giuffre? How about Virginia Roberts Giuffre? Okay, now you remember Virginia Giuffre. This is her with Prince Andrew. That there in the background smiling and smirking is Jeffrey Epstein's madam. Yeah, Virginia Giuffre is the person who brought down Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell in the back there, and even Prince Andrew. She was one of the first and major victims of sex trafficking to come forward. And there is a big update. She may be dead in 4 days. I will explain all of this in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. Let me start here, though. If you spend much time in Mexico or the Caribbean, you know the palace resorts, even if you can't afford to stay there. And if you can, and if you have, you may have had the time of your life. Palace properties are five-star, all-inclusive beach resorts in Jamaica, the Dominican Republic, and especially Mexico. They are hotels, yes. But they also offer timeshares, lots of them. And if you think I'm about to warn you about the fine print when signing on to a timeshare, no, 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 my friends. This is not Consumer Reports. Tonight, this story is more like Midnight Express. Because a dispute with the Palace Corporation over a timeshare, both the payments and the promises, has landed a Michigan couple in a Mexican prison, and not just any Mexican prison. Paul and Christy Acao are in a maximum security Mexican prison near the Eastern Resort city of Cancun. It is a fight that most of us Americans would think should have landed in civil court. But as it turns out, the Mexican government doesn't think like America. The couple's U.S. attorney calls the prison that is holding the Acaos a hellhole. And as of tonight, the Acaos have been stuck in there for 27 days. I want to read for you part of a letter that their lawyer wrote to opposing counsel with Palace Resorts. Here's how it goes. Your clients have captured, kidnapped, battered, assaulted, falsely imprisoned, threatened, intimidated, belittled, harassed, libeled, and engaged in a course of such horrific and outrageous civil and criminal conduct against these two elderly Americans that it is almost incomprehensible. End quote. Let me back up for a hot minute to where the story started. In 2021, Paul Akeo, a 58-year-old U.S. Navy retiree, and his wife Christy Akeo, a 60-year-old grandmother, they bought a Palace Resorts timeshare. And the following year, in 2022, they pulled out, or they tried to, claiming that the company didn't make good on the promises. They asked the credit card company, American Express, to refund them the payments that they'd already made. Not just a little, a lot. Like more than $115,000 worth. And so American Express did its own investigation. And American Express sided with Mr. and Mrs. Akeo. So the couple thought that was it. That was the end of it. Lesson learned. But there were much harder lessons just ahead. Palace Resorts decided to tell the police, reportedly, that the Akeos had committed fraud. And so when Paul and Christy flew to Cancun on March 4th for another vacation at another resort, the Mexican police arrested them. Needless to say, their daughter back in Michigan is worried sick.
Comprehend what's happening, trying to figure out how to get into some sort of communication with our parents. I mean, through the 21 days, we haven't talked to my stepdad, Paul, one time. My mom usually gets a phone call a day. It's not for very long at all. It's basically a phone call that she gets until somebody in the background will tell her to get off the phone, and then she has to hang up.
This can happen, folks. So News Nation's Nancy Liu has been watching this story, or should I say this nightmare, every step of the way, and she has this background report. Take a look.
Relatives of Paul and Christy Akeo claim this is a case of corruption and extortion stemming from a financial dispute with the Palace Resorts Company, which they thought had been settled already. Instead, check out this footage of the Michigan couple being taken into custody earlier this month when they returned to Cancun. Mexican authorities had placed a notice on the Akeos' passports due to outstanding criminal fraud charges, and the Americans have since been held without bond in a maximum security prison. Relatives are worried sick.
Every second of every day, we are concerned for their safety, especially with the lack of communication or no communication. The idea that they're sitting in a maximum security prison over a timeshare dispute at best is unacceptable.
According to Mexican authorities, Christy Akeo signed a timeshare contract in 2021, providing a credit card to purchase a membership with the Palace Company, which operates resorts in Mexico and Jamaica. Paul Akeo later challenged 13 charges on his credit card, totaling more than $113,000. And according to their attorney, American Express sided with the Akeos. The money was returned and the membership was canceled. Attorney John Manley tells News Nation the Palace Resorts is now demanding $250,000 for the couple to be released, and he describes the prison where they're being held as a hellhole. We've reached out to the Palace Resorts Company for comment, and so far no response. Michigan's governors and lawmakers are now involved, also seeking assistance from the White House and State Department.
So that's Nancy Liu for you. What appears to have ticked off the Palace Resorts the most is the Akeos complaining about them on Facebook and offering to help other members void their contracts, which is not illegal. But you know, when at the top of the show I mentioned Midnight Express? I did that for a reason, because my first guest tonight inspired the 1978 movie that scared the hell out of a generation of Americans about landing in a foreign prison for any reason. Billy Hayes might well have died in a prison in Turkey had he not escaped. And we're also joined by Billy Hayes' lawyer at the time, Dick Atkins, who now specializes in helping Americans navigate legal troubles when overseas. And welcome to both of you. Billy, it's great to have you back on the show. I've got to ask you this question. When you hear a story like this, do you get like PTSD? Do you feel, oh God, it's like deja vu?
A little bit, yes. I was aware that I was doing something that could lead to an arrest. I was young and foolish, etc. These guys were not expecting this at all. And I think it came as a complete surprise to them. And to be put in a prison at 60 years old, I was 25. I was young and fit. It was hard at 25. It's brutal when you're older. And they should not be in jail. This is a civil matter. It should be settled somewhere outside of a prison.
Billy, there are very few people, I mean, count them on one hand if you can, who know your experience. Can you tell me, walk me through those first moments, those first nights, what the Akeos might be going through as they realize this maximum security prison they're in with rapists and murderers in a foreign country?
Well, obviously, it's frightening. I think Paul, having been in the service all those years, obviously has a discipline about himself that he now has to call into his favor. He needs to be calm. He needs to try and stay as balanced as he can for himself and for Christy. The fact that they haven't been allowed to see each other, that they're separated, that's very troubling. And I'm sure it bothers them more than anything else. The physical conditions of the prison aren't good, but I'm assuming that they're not getting the worst of things yet. The Mexican government is making such a mistake to put these people in jail and creating all of this publicity. People are not going to go on vacation in Mexico if they see what happens to Americans who truly shouldn't be in jail now. They can deal with things legally in a court of law, but this is not the way it should be handled.
Well, that's how I feel. Look, I'm going to give you full disclosure right now. I have visited Palace Resorts many times in Cancun. I never for a moment thought this kind of a thing can happen. And Dick, maybe you can weigh in. Does any of what you're hearing about the Akeos experience track for Mexico and their legal system?
It certainly does. In Mexico, things which ordinarily would be civil can be either civil or criminal. I'll give you the example. If you're in a car accident in Mexico, it's treated as a criminal matter if someone is hurt. If you are rear-ended and the other person is injured, you will be taken to jail and you'll be there until somebody takes pity on you and lets you be released. Other things can also be criminal. And in this case, apparently, the Palace Resorts were upset enough to go criminal instead of civil. So it happens in Mexico very often. It doesn't happen very often to Americans who have a lot of support and have TV shows like yours giving publicity, though.
Well, I cannot imagine why Palace Resorts would have, for $115,000 or so, have wanted to get into this dogfight with an American couple, especially a veteran. But I do want to ask you about the State Department and the embassy. Like, what help is the embassy to start with, and then the State Department in a situation like this? And while you're at it, in Billy's situation, because he was there a long time in Turkey before he was able to get out on his own.
Quite a while, actually. About 5 years.
Let Billy answer what the State Department did for him, and then I'll say what they do.
Well, the American Consul sent someone out the first or second or third day I was there, and they provided me with the basic legal stuff that they needed to do, and a list of Turkish lawyers I could look at. I mean, a list I couldn't even pronounce these names. You need a lawyer as soon as possible because the wheel of justice grinds very slowly, but you want to get out from under it as soon as possible. These folks didn't have a chance. I don't think they had anybody immediately talking to them about their legal options, and the sooner you can exercise your legal options, the better. So they're kind of stuck right now. The good thing is the world is aware of them. I would tell them, if I could, and or their kids, Lindsay, who has been working very hard, stay calm. Stay calm. Take care of yourself. Do your breathing exercises. Paul probably does physical stuff. He was in the Navy. Take care of yourself. We'll take care of you. Eventually, this will end and you will come home.
And the State
that
Department
eventually
does
part
very
scares
little.
Me, Dick. Yeah, so listen, the son of the Akeo said that he's heard it's possible they'll be held for 6 months possibly before this is resolved. Is there a maximum length of time that they can hold them like this before
no.
they actually have to have the kind
Absolutely
of rights that we get in a trial?
The first 6 months is almost automatic, but they can be kept in jail until the case is over. And that could take 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 years. Palos can delay it. The fiscal who'll be assigned to it can delay it, and they can be stuck there forever. Hopefully they won't. They won't survive that long.
And a show
Billy,
like
what do you
yours
think
right
about
now,
the State Department? Go ahead.
I'm sorry. In a show like yours right now, raising their profile, getting the word out, is going to reverberate with the Mexican government. They know this is deadly for their tourism. So why would they want to waste time and effort with these people and hurt their image so badly that people are going to be canceling their vacations? They need to get these people out. They need to get them home. Deal with it however you want legally. But get them out of prison. They're 60 years old. They should not be in jail.
I mean, yeah, and a jail is one thing, and a maximum security prison is another. I will also say this. My children were in Mexico with their dad and their stepmom, and they got into a fender bender with a motorcycle, and they were held for a day in a police station with no information. They were absolutely terrified, and ultimately the only way they got out was paying, because the yes. local police suggested it. And so they paid hundreds of dollars and they, you know, went on their way. And it was just a terrifying experience. Dick, real quickly, just at the State Department level, do you think this is how this will get resolved, that the U.S. government will see this as just ridiculous and really put the foot on the neck of the Mexican government for this couple?
They can help a little. The State Department does what it can, but they can be a very little help, but they could raise the profile. But as Billy said, your show and other shows and constant news reporting on this is going to do more than what the State Department can do. The president might want to get involved, and he certainly can create such a stir that they had better let them out. He might have a ban on Americans going to Mexico. Things like that are more likely to help than the State Department doing anything that they can. They're quite limited.
Well, I know the ACOs have reached out and begged Donald Trump to step in and help them. I don't know if that'll happen. Billy Hayes, it is always good to talk to you. I so appreciate your wisdom in times like this, because this is such a rare occurrence. And Dick Atkins, it's good of you to join too. I appreciate this. And I may call you again. We're watching the story carefully. Thanks,
anytime.
Guys.
Anytime. Thank you.
Good to know. And I promise you, we are going to watch this. These are two Americans who just went on vacation. Know what you're doing, where you're going, and what your rights are. Okay, still to come. What murder defendant would not want to pick her very own jury? Because that is exactly what is happening in Arizona right now. Lori Vallow, who did not think it wise to take the stand in Idaho when she was tried and convicted of a triple murder, is now taking a stand in her next murder trial, because she'll literally be pacing that courtroom on her feet, acting as her own lawyer. So how do you think day one went? Jury selection. I will ask a juror from her first trial next.
This is News Nation with a trust rating higher than any of our competitors. News Nation is proud to be America's fastest growing cable news network. See for yourself at joinnn.com.
So far, Lori Vallow Daybell has held her own, more or less, in the role of defense attorney on murder charges in Arizona. She has argued motions, she's made demands, she's gone back and forth with the judge, just like a real lawyer would do. Here's Lori Vallow Daybell during a pretrial hearing today. Safe to say, she's pretty fired up.
The state talks about in their response, like, the state is claiming trial by ambush from the defense. Trial by ambush. How is the defense trial by ambush when they have interviewed every single one of these witnesses before in the last 5 years since this case started? They've interviewed every single person that has been on there. They have written transcripted interviews and video interviews of all of these people. And so how they are relevant, these witnesses will testify if and when they are needed to add additional facts or fill in the blanks that the state will no doubt leave out in their case in chief. And they'll be called accordingly. I need them to lay perhaps foundations for evidence presented by the state. The same with Lonnie Dworkin. I need him. His testimony will be required if and when it's necessary to rebut digital information that the state will bring forward during trial. I feel like the state is trying to say, okay, if you want your speedy trial, guess what? We're not going to let you defend yourself. Guess what? You can't have any experts. And guess what else? You can't have any witnesses. You can't have anybody speak in your behalf. So good luck. Have a nice day.
Okie dokie. Well, that's all fine and dandy in the lead up to a murder trial, but the main event has just started. A jury is now being picked, 12 members and four alternates, to decide if that doomsday cult mom conspired with her now dead brother to kill her fourth husband, Charles Vallow. It is dead serious. And if you're a little fuzzy on the details, I do not blame you. Here's our Caitlin Becker to sort it all out.
Ashley, she's already behind bars for life for the killings of three different people, two of which were her own children. And now a jury in Arizona is set to decide if Lori Vallow has any culpability in the killing of yet another person, her husband at the time, Charles Vallow.
Charles Vallow was shot to death in 2019 inside of an Arizona home. Lori Vallow's on trial, but she didn't kill her husband. Her brother, Alex Cox, did. It was early morning on July 11th when Charles went to pick up their son, JJ, for school. Alex would tell police that he confronted Charles about abusing his sister, things then turned physical, and he had no choice but to fire a gun at the 62-year-old, killing him in self-defense. When asked by investigators, Lori's teenage daughter, Tylee, corroborated that fight story. But none of this sat well with law enforcement. Vallow's death was investigated as a homicide. So was Lori Vallow the one actually pulling the strings? Well, that's certainly what prosecutors believe. Cox murdered Vallow in cold blood, they say, and he did it at the behest of his sister. At the time, Lori was having an affair with Chad Daybell, a zealous wannabe religious leader who believed he and Lori alone were going to lead tens of thousands of people to salvation. Charles had filed for divorce from Lori and was threatening to tell Chad's wife, Tammy, about their affair. He was also afraid for his life. In the months before his murder, Charles went to police, saying Lori threatened to kill him, all as a part of her doomsday preparations.
Charles has been killed. I'm going to kill you. You're going to murder today or tomorrow. I can do it. I'm back there with my priest. How is she? She's in here. She's scared to cry about it.
Aside from Lori Vallow herself, the only people who can definitively say what happened that day are the people who were there. Charles Vallow, Alex Cox, Tylee Ryan, and JJ Vallow. But none of them will be able to tell their story to a jury about what they saw. All four of them are dead. Tylee and JJ were murdered, their bodies disposed of on the grounds of Chad Daybell's Idaho home, and their mother Lori convicted in their deaths, as well as the murder of Chad's wife Tammy. And before the remains of those children were discovered, Alex Cox died suddenly of natural causes.
Ashley, this isn't even the only case she's dealing with in Arizona, and she's representing herself, by the way. After this case wraps up, Lori will head back to court to face charges related to the attempted murder of Brandon Boudreau. And just like in the Charles Vallow case, prosecutors believe Alex Cox pulled the trigger and Lori Vallow pulled the strings.
Caitlin Becker, thank you, because this is labyrinthian, this story. Cameras were not allowed into the courtroom today for the jury selection part, so we didn't get to see Lori in action, like asking them questions and voir dire. But we got a sneak peek at what it may have been like during the Dateline. Remember, she did that with Keith Morrison earlier this month? Here's a sample.
Are you keeping track, Keith? Can we agree on that, Keith? Can I joke with you, Keith? Can we joke? Good one, Keith. You've heard a lot of stuff, Keith, and I'm here to say you've heard a lot of stuff, but what I tell you will be the truth. I thought we were going to be friends, Keith. I thought we were going to be friends. Get your facts straight, Keith. Aren't appearances not what they might seem to be, Keith? Could you get your life story out in 90 minutes, Keith? How old are you, Keith? Keith, we could talk all day. I could talk all day. I don't have anything to do. You could extend your time. Come back. Come see me.
I just say I would not speak to Keith Morrison like that. The trial in Arizona comes 2 years after Lori Vallow was convicted in Idaho in the murders of two of her kids, JJ and Tylee. She was also convicted of murdering the wife of the man she would marry just weeks later, Chad Daybell. For all of that, she is serving multiple life sentences in Idaho without the possibility of parole. Her husband, Chad, was convicted of the same crimes, and he was sentenced to death. So Lori got off easy. I'm joined now by Tom Evans. Tom was a juror in Lori's first trial, and he's written two books about Lori and Chad Daybell. His latest is titled Chad Daybell, The One Mighty and Strong. It's available on Amazon today. Tom, it's good to have you back on the show. Thank you so much. You were in court. You are so invested. Tell me your impressions. How did she do? Is it the same Lori Vallow you had to sit through all those weeks and weeks, or was she different?
She was different. When I watched her in court as a juror, she didn't say one word, didn't show a whole lot of emotion. But today, she was a little bit hostile toward the judge, toward the prosecution. Like,
if there were a jury present, if let's say you were a juror this time around, what would you think of her?
It wouldn't go over very well. She's used to manipulating people, but she's kind of lost that ability because of the things that she's done. And it shows.
So did you see her Dateline interview with Keith Morrison? Because I, for one, am a big Keith Morrison fan. I think of him as sort of at the pinnacle of true crime reporting and in journalism in general. And I was offended at how she spoke with him. What were your thoughts?
I felt the same way. I did watch that interview. I felt the exact same way. And she's talking to the judge in this case the same way. And it's a little bit offensive. And he's very patient with her.
Well, we'll see, right? What happens when the jury is in the room? Because the one thing, as a panelist on her in her first murder trial, you would not have seen her behavior in the courtroom when you weren't in the courtroom, right? The jury moves out, and lots of things happen when a defendant is at the defense table with with counsel, or in this case, it'll be an assistant counsel. But do you think that Lori has the ability to weave between personalities, the kind that we're seeing today, feisty, the kind that we saw with Keith Morrison, off-putting, and perhaps the person that she needs to be if she wants to win over a jury?
I don't see how she's going to win the jury over, honestly. I don't think she has a chance of doing that. She's going to try. She's going to use all of her manipulative skills. But it's not going to go anywhere. There won't be one juror that gets sucked into that. That's my bet anyway. If I were a betting man, if they allowed betting on trials, I would bet on this one.
Well, what I am so fascinated by is the fact that as a juror in round one, you're back and you are in this courtroom. But I can also see that you're quite an author and you've got other books in the future, too. I'm going to call you again as we continue to wade through Lori Vallow Daybell. And let me just give another plug for your latest book. It's called Chad Daybell, The One Mighty and Strong. Tom Evans, thank you for this. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Ashley. And I'll talk to you anytime.
Oh, I'm glad about that, and I am going to call you. Thank you so much. Okay, folks, still to come, they had it all. They had great careers, killer good looks, and $1 million home in paradise, and who knows if it was those killer good looks that did them in, but she is currently in the hospital fighting for her life, and he is in jail facing the real possibility that will be his new life. The curious case of the man accused of trying to kill his wife on a cliffside lookout in Hawaii. And the bits and pieces of motive that are starting to emerge. We've got them. Next.
You're listening to Banfield on News Nation's audio stream. Available 24/7 on the News Nation app. Or just say, Alexa, play News Nation.
It seems the marriage of Gerhard and Ariel Koenig was on the rocks long before he allegedly tried to push her off a rock in Hawaii. More specifically, a 1,000-foot cliff. As you know from our coverage, Gerhard is an anesthesiologist on the island of Maui. His wife, Ariel, is a nuclear engineer, and they were visiting Oahu for Ariel's 36th birthday when they decided to go for a hike. And that's when all hell broke loose. Ariel reportedly refused to get near the edge of the Pali lookout so that Gerhard could snap some selfies. Police say that's when Gerhard threw her into some nearby bushes and began bashing her head with a rock and tried to inject her with God knows what. The attack was interrupted by other hikers, and tonight we know from her hospital bed that Arielle has requested and has been granted a restraining order to keep her husband far away. And it shouldn't be a problem because Gerhardt is being held without bail on an attempted murder charge. In her petition, she says Gerhardt had been abusing her sexually for months and that in December, he accused her of cheating on him. They sought counseling as a couple as well as individually, but Arielle says that he tried to monitor and control all of her communications with other people regardless. She also reveals that after she refused the selfie, her husband said, quote, "Get back over there. I'm so effing sick of you." If all that weren't stunning enough, Arielle says that she's learned of a FaceTime call between Gerhardt and his grown son, Arielle's stepson, after the attack, but before Gerhardt was arrested. She says her husband told his son, quote, "I just tried to kill Ari, but she got away." And then he apparently said he wanted to kill himself. Joining me now to unpack all of this is Annie Elise. She's the host of the true crime podcast, Serialously with Annie Elise. Annie, it's good to have you. Thank you so much for being on tonight. I got to get your hot take on this crime. I know you've covered it extensively.
Yes, nice to be here. I definitely think this was premeditated.
Why do you think so, other than the fact that it sounds like there were syringes involved and one doesn't typically hike with a syringe?
Because it wasn't just the one time that he attacked her while they were on this hike. It was three different times in which he tried to either incapacitate her or attack her or worse, kill her. I don't think it was just a moment where he snapped and he got angry, but I believe it was more calculated than that. He tried to have the selfie near the cliff. That didn't work. He then tried to inject her. When that didn't work because she bit him, he then bashed her head in with a rock.
It's so stunning to hear these allegations. And again, they're allegations until proven in a court of law. But boy, are we learning a lot from what Arielle herself has been able to say in legal documents from her bedside. Talk to me a little bit about this FaceTime call that allegedly he had with his son after the alleged attack, but before he was arrested. What else was said in that call?
So he allegedly called his son, who is Ari's stepson, and he reportedly was bloody while he was on this FaceTime call and confided, "I tried to kill her, she got away," and that he was going to jump off a cliff and take his own life, which we, of course, now didn't we know it didn't happen. But what I find interesting, too, is the restraining order was not only granted for her, but for their two children, her mother, their dog, and then also her stepson, the one that he had called that day.
Wow, I don't know how often I've heard of a dog also being included in a... And I'll tell you what, it doesn't surprise me because in many domestic abuse cases, dogs are often abused in front of wives and children as part of a psychological torture to family members. So just quickly, I want to ask you also about this allegation that that he grabbed her hair during this attack. What else happened there?
So reportedly, when she didn't want to take the selfie near the cliff, that's when he yelled at her. And so he grabbed her by the hair and she was on the ground. That's when he reportedly took out the syringe, tried to inject her. She bit his arm. Then he went back to get another syringe. Then the hiker started walking over and that's when he grabbed her hair, reportedly bashed her head into the ground and then took that rock and struck her 10 times in the head.
That's so incredibly violent, the pattern that she's describing. I am fascinated by the syringe in this story, the syringes, plural. Do we have any information yet what might have been in those syringes?
Not at the moment. From what I have read, he had two syringes and a vial on him, but they haven't recovered it yet, so they don't know what was in those. I would imagine that when he fled on foot, he disposed of them, and so I don't know if they have maybe recovered them and haven't put it in the record yet, but we don't know what was in it. But he was an anesthesiologist, so it really could have been anything.
I mean, he certainly would, as an anesthesiologist, have access to a lot. Basically anything at this point. But what do we know about her? It sounds to me like at least she's able to communicate from her hospital bed. Is she going to be okay? What's the extent of her injuries? Are they even releasing that kind of information?
All that I've been able to gather is that she has significant facial injuries at this time, which I suspect are from the rock that he allegedly used on her multiple times. And we also know that before he even attempted to take that selfie with her on the cliff, she reportedly was dizzy during their hike, so much so that she said, "I'm a little nervous, I'm a little anxious, I'm going to go down to the bottom and wait for you, and you can keep hiking and come back down." So I don't know if maybe the dizzy spell, he maybe tried to give her something before, or that it was just the anxiety. It's unclear.
Wow. Great work. Annie Elise, thank you so much for this. Quick plug for your podcast. It is called, it's hard to pronounce, but it's called Serialously. Look forward to talking to you again, Annie. Thank you for this.
Thanks
all right,
so
folks,
much for
it is hard
me.
Enough. We'll have you back for sure. It's hard enough to pick a jury in a run-of-the-mill case, right? Now add in allegations of police corruption, a mistrial, impaired driving, domestic abuse, and a healthy dose of Netflix. And you've got yourself the Karen Reed trial, which is now hours away from getting started. And we just got our hands on the questions that the jurors are going to be answering in the morning. I am reading them to you next. Jury selection starts tomorrow in what I'm going to call the biggest murder trial, retrial of 2025. And I know the year is young, but it's Karen Reed, so there's that. You know the case. Her boyfriend, a Boston cop, was found dead in the snow. She's accused of hitting him with her SUV outside a house party that was filled with cops. But Karen Reed says that she was framed by those cops, and her first jury hung. So this is trial number two, and it begins with 30 separate questions for jury candidates. And we just got our hands on the questionnaire. And I was pretty floored, actually. So I want to read for you a couple of my favorites. Start with this one. Have you already started to make up your mind about this case? Do you have any knowledge of this case gained from any source? Yes or no? What is your source of knowledge? And then it starts listing out all the sources possible. And listen to this long list. TV, radio, internet, Twitter, social media, like Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, podcasts. And it goes on and on from there. It also asks, what are the details of the case that you are able to recall? This case is expected to garner a significant amount of media attention. Is there anything about the high-profile nature of this case that would prevent you from serving as a fair and impartial juror? There are even more questions like this, but this questionnaire continues to cover a lot of ground. It digs into the attitudes about law enforcement as well. So listen to this. It asks, if the testimony were in conflict, would you tend to believe the testimony of a police officer more than any other witness simply because the witness is a police officer? Conversely, would you tend to disbelieve a police officer simply because the witness is a police officer? The questions dig in a little more as to whether you were a member of any kind of organization that was pro or anti-cop, which is very, very interesting. And then it moves to the subject of drunk driving and crime. Has anyone close to you ever been involved in an incident involving drinking and driving? If so, would that experience prevent you from being a fair and impartial juror in this case? And then there are more questions about Karen Reed personally and attitudes towards cameras in the courtroom. Then there's this one. If the defendant does not testify, do you think that she's probably guilty or hiding something? Just to refresh your memory, Karen Reed is charged with second-degree murder, motor vehicle manslaughter while driving under the influence and leaving the scene of a collision causing death. And if you tune in here each and every night, you are not going to miss any of the highlights or the lowlights of this trial number two. And before I move on, I got a two-word update in the case of Joshua Reby, the last person seen with Sudik Shikonanki in the Dominican Republic before that spring breaker disappeared. And those two words are this: case closed. A Dominican judge has upheld his own prior ruling that Reby was unlawfully detained in Sudik's disappearance, and that judge declined to file any more charges. Reby flew home to the U.S. 2 weeks ago, and he will not have to return to face any other criminal charges in connection with her death, we think. Sadiqa's body has never been found in this case. And still to come tonight, she helped to bring down the most infamous sexual predator and trafficker of our time, Jeffrey Epstein. Not to mention a member of the British royal family, Prince Andrew. And now Virginia Giuffre has resurfaced online with a bizarre and puzzling claim that, quote, after the worst start to a new year, she now has only 4 days left to live. Is this for real? Is Giuffre actually dying? What on earth happened? I'll tell you what we know next.
Thanks for listening to News Nation on the go. I'm Marnie Hughes. We're here for you 24/7 on the News Nation app or on your Alexa. Just say play News Nation.
There is no question she's famous, even though fame is not something that people who report sexual assault typically seek. But Virginia Giuffre is not your average survivor. She became a recognizable name after she effectively brought down Jeffrey Epstein and his right-hand woman, Ghislaine Maxwell, but it didn't end there. Virginia Roberts Giuffre also told the world and backed it up with a picture that she was trafficked to Prince Andrew, the once favorite son of the late Queen Elizabeth, when she was just 17. Now Epstein, of course, is dead. Ghislaine Maxwell is in prison. Andrew is a non-entity in the royal family. And Giuffre has announced that she is dying with just 4 days left to live. Yesterday, she shocked the internet, which is not easy to do, looking battered and bruised in an Instagram post saying that she'd been hit by a speeding school bus. I should note that she's 41 now and the mother of three living in Australia. Here is part of what she posted online. Quote, no matter what your car is made of, she writes, it might as well be a tin can. I have gone into kidney renal failure. They've given me 4 days to live, transferring me to a specialist hospital in urology, end quote. Details of the crash are unknown, making it tough to even confirm that a crash occurred, but a representative did follow up today with a statement, and I quote, Virginia has been in a serious accident and is receiving medical care in the hospital. She greatly appreciates the support and well wishes that people are sending. One of those well wishers appears to be Giuffre's own father, Sky Roberts, who posted this quote, I love you and praying you get the correct treatment to live a long and healthy life. And you can bet that we're going to circle back to this when we get more information on it. That is all that we have for tonight. As always, check out my podcast, Drop Dead Serious. Lots of coverage on Valo and Karen Reed.